So is Garrick Van Buren crazy?
Hi, welcome to First Crack number 25 with Garrick Van Buren. In today's conversation, I'm sitting down with Jennifer Baalbek, photo blogger at ImageLab.com and AmericanGuilt.com. We're over at the Freight House, Dunn Brothers Freight House in downtown Minneapolis. Great place to hang out, great place to have a good conversation. And we do, on weblogs, on the media landscape, on, you know, lots of good stuff. So sit back and enjoy.
So we wanted to talk about blogs?
Yeah.
Okay.
Tell me about your newfound, the new blogs you set up in what, a couple of days?
You said,
I'm going to do it and set up two.
Yeah. Well, my friend of mine started a blog, and she's not really a techie at all or anything. She just wanted a creative outlet.
Right.
Because she recently had, well, about a year and a half ago, had a son and hasn't had a lot of time to be creative, I guess.
Okay.
So reading hers for, I don't know, 6 weeks or so was just really inspirational. And then my husband is a computer geek, so we had talked about blogs. And I kept saying, are you going to set up a blog? Or are you going to set up a blog? And finally, I think it was last Friday, I just got sick of waiting.
Right.
And I was at Google for something. And I went into their other Google resources,
okay. And
there was a big blog
logo. The big blogger logo, yeah.
Yeah, and I was like, okay, well, I wonder how hard this is.
Okay.
So I clicked on it, and it was literally like four steps.
Yeah.
You know, and I was able to actually set it up, to hook it up to my domain.
Yeah. Ah.
So you can use theirs, or you can use yours. So essentially, I've got mine, which is theimagelab.com, and that's where I'm hosting all my photos online.
With your new camera?
With my, well, it's a year old now.
Okay.
I guess that's still kind of new.
Yeah.
But I got new equipment for it.
I think it was a serious enough investment that I think it will always be new.
Yeah, that's true. Actually, it's the lenses that are the investment.
Okay.
Which is kind of scary, but anyway.
Anyway. So you're at the Image Lab, that's where you're hosting all your photos.
Exactly, okay. Yeah. And that was something that, it's an open source program that my husband set up on our
servers.
Gallery, yeah, exactly. And that's really, really nice because it's got like four or five different options that people can order the pictures from.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah,
oh.
It's in that you pick a picture, and then in the upper right-hand corner there's a drop-down, and you can order this picture from, like I said, there's like four or five different options. So it's agnostic sort of in that way.
Right.
And I don't know how others can get into that.
Have you tried that out?
I haven't, because I'll usually either print them or,
right.
Actually Costco does a really great job printing digital pictures.
Mm, just bring the chip in, the card in?
Yeah. It's really nice and really, really inexpensive too. And then Apple.
Right.
That's the other place I've printed more, I guess, elaborate sort of configurations of photos, books, and bigger things.
I heard there's a plugin, an iPhoto plugin for Gallery.
Really?
So you can export right through it.
Oh, I'm going to write that down. iPhoto plugin for Gallery.
I tried that for a while. Yeah, my server in my basement is being a dev server. I set up Gallery on the website of that.
Oh, okay.
And then just, you know, plugged it into iPhoto and worked pretty slick. All the photos I take with my little camera phone, I'm pulling into iPhoto and then sending to Flickr the same sort of way. Like, there's
okay.
A Flickr plugin for iPhoto.
Oh. Well, iPhoto's pretty smart.
Yeah.
So, back to the blogs.
Back to the blogs.
So I just click, and all of a sudden I had a blog, and it was really exciting to find out it was that easy. And not only did I get mine set up and posted, like, I don't know, probably within 15 minutes,
right.
I found it, I had one, and I'd posted.
Mm-hmm.
And I just kept playing and playing with it all night, in fact. And my husband came home, and he was like, what are you doing? And I said, I set up a blog. And he was like, what? Oh, my gosh, it's that easy? So he did it, too. And he set up a AmericanGuilt.com.
Okay.
Because we've had that domain for a while. In thinking about, I guess we got it after September 11th, but thinking about being guilty as an American for different things that we're doing that are really negatively affecting the world.
All right.
So it's sort of a, I guess, social, political, religious commentary kind of place.
Right.
And we really want to invite our friends to be posting there as well.
Nice.
So I have my personal one. Mm-hmm. We have American Guild, and then I think he's going to set up a personal one too.
Nice.
But it's interesting because we had a big discussion about, well, how do you know which blog to post to?
Excellent question. It's an excellent question.
It is. They're linked back and forth right now, but that is, you know, how do you categorize your thoughts? This is sort of your online journal, and it's your thoughts about things, or maybe a picture of something or whatever, but how do you decide?
And I think that's a really interesting conversation, right? And,
yeah.
You know, some people have just said, okay, I'm going to throw everything that I publish is going to be under this one site, this one domain, whatever.
Right.
You know, good, bad, indifferent, personal, professional ideas, right?
Yeah.
So the benefit of that is you get a really comprehensive view of this person.
Yes.
The downside is...
You get a really comprehensive view of this person.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Right. So.
Well, it happens more and more. I've noticed myself, like if I'm going to be meeting somebody or anything like where I'm going to be interacting with a new person, I'll usually check them out online.
Sure.
Type them into Google and
yeah.
see what's up, or you know, if they have a blog, then I have that much more information about them,
uh-huh.
which is what. Actually stopped me for a really long time from starting a blog was a fear or concern around saying something that the whole world could see.
Right.
And what does that mean? And actually my husband said something really interesting about that in his first blog post last week, which was something about there will be no secrets unless we choose to keep them secret. So it's getting more and more transparent. Our
yeah.
lives are becoming more transparent.
Yeah.
I mean, we still have secrets, and not, we don't live in glass houses, literally, but things are just more out there,
yeah.
more prevalent, more known, mm-hmm. more in the ether, I guess, kind of.
Right. Well, there's that. I don't know, maybe listening to something off of IT Conversations or.
Okay.
Somehow the phrase off-grid came into my...
Off-grid.
Off-grid.
Okay.
Came into my psyche. I'm like, well, what an interesting concept. Maybe that would be possible 5 years ago. Maybe it would be possible 10 years ago.
Right.
But today, if
no.
you're trying to do anything, no.
Someone's going to know.
Someone's going to know. It's going to
get
online.
They're going to take a picture. They're going to
yeah.
write about it.
Yes. You can't get... off-grid.
Yeah, exactly. Well, you can. You can in private spaces.
Sure.
In your home, in a room with no windows,
yeah.
you know, those kinds
boundary
of
waters,
things. Yeah,
maybe.
Exactly. Completely away from other human beings. But, yeah, if you're in public, it's so much more public than it's ever been before.
Excellent. Interesting point, right?
So
we have people like politicians or Hollywood movie stars or celebrities or TV stars or whatever, right, who have to deal with, as part of their profession,
right.
they have to deal with this constant publicity.
The paparazzi.
Right?
Yeah.
So we are now in a stage where we are all both paparazzi and stars.
Yep. That's true. That's pretty interesting. And it's kind of, I think a lot of people want it that way in a sense of, I always think about 15 Minutes of Fame and people really want to be on TV.
Right.
Jerry Springer is a great example
Absolutely.
Of that. You know, why would people go, on Jerry Springer to do the things that they do because they want to be on TV.
Yeah.
That's why. Right. You know, it doesn't matter that they look a certain way. You know, I don't really want to be judgmental about that. But that they want to be on TV.
Right.
They want their 15 minutes of fame. And so that's almost more possible now.
Yeah.
You know, you can, through your own creative measure and means, get somewhere that you never, ever could before. You know, if you really have a vision about a movie that you need to make, you can actually access those tools now
right.
in a way that you never could before. And not only the tools to make the movie, but the tools to distribute the movie and put it out there and get it out there and have people see it, have people even buy it.
Yeah, and that was, you know, with conversations with Chuck about blockumentaries is, you know, I have the tools to make this movie.
Right.
I can create it. I can distribute it. I can get it out in the world. And I can even say, all right, people, make a better one.
Yes.
Here's all the tools, plus here's all my footage, all the scenes. You know, make a better version of my movie for me.
Yeah.
Thanks.
And that's amazing to me. I wrote about that in my blog. For someone, an artist, to put out all of their raw material like that in a world where things are just closing in more and more and more and copyright is becoming more of a constriction on freedom, for someone to do that, it's amazing to me. I mean, think of how many versions of that movie you could have.
Right.
You know, if people take him up on his offer and actually go do that.
Yeah.
How cool would that be? You could have a whole film festival.
A whole film
festival? That was different
about
versions
the
of the same
yeah.
movie, right? It's kind of like a choose-your-own-adventure.
Yeah. They could all be intertwined and crossed over.
There you go.
Yeah.
Exactly. Someone could program the whole thing.
Pull in live blogs as it's happening. That's just
right.
crazy.
And it'll be blogs, exactly.
Yeah.
And then someone will film the blogging of the blogger watching the movie. And suddenly, it's like that picture. We had this toy chest when I was little, and it was a picture of Raggedy Ann and Andy standing by a toy chest. With a picture of Raggedy Ann and Andy standing, by, so it like was infinity.
Right.
It just went into infinity. And I remember always staring at that and just, when does it end, you know? But that's what the Blogumentary Film Fest would be like.
Has it been a year ago now that you've had Sirius?
We've had Sirius for about a year.
Yeah.
Yep, exactly. And I'm actually a little disappointed because Sirius and XM are talking about merging now. So, I don't know what that means, but we're lucky here in the Twin Cities, though, because we now have a radio station.
Yes.
That the current...
You're pretty excited about it also.
Yeah, I am very excited about it. I know a lot of people are very excited about it, and... we're just really lucky. We have this presence of intellectual radio, access to that, and...
This always seems to be somebody, some station, somewhere in the Twin Cities, you know, going back as far as I can remember, that's always tried to fill this niche.
Yeah, that's true. There has been a void for a few years.
Yeah.
I remember when Rev... 105 went off the air. It was like literally yanked off the air.
Mm-hmm.
I heard Sean Stewart sounding like she was crying, and then I went into the store and I came back out and there was heavy metal playing, and I didn't know what was going on until later that day when I realized the heavy metal wasn't stopping, and Sean Stewart never came back.
Oh. And then it's gone through things like been a country station. And
Yeah. Well, there was 104, too.
104 was great.
Yeah. I didn't live here then. That was when I was in college.
I was able to pick that up in Wisconsin.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Really?
So that was like my little link to
The Twin Cities.
Civilization, yeah.
Oh, nice.
It was 104.1, and then it was really good, and then they went heavy metal, which I'm like, well, it's all right. And then they went country, and I'm like, oh, yeah, that just sucks.
Oh, yeah, the country. Yeah. We were at, actually, the night before 104 went off the air, we were at a Henry Rollins concert, and... it was being sponsored by 104, which kind of is weird because they were going off the air the next day. And so one of the DJs came out, and I don't know who it was because I wasn't a regular listener, but he was like, everyone, call this number and complain and protest that we're going off the air.
Wow.
And that got the crowd pretty riled up, so... I don't know if he was like a preamble to Henry Rollins or what that was. But my friends all went home and called. So yeah. They didn't get a hold of anyone, though. It was just a place to leave a message. Mm. So that was a little disappointing. Nobody to yell at. You're taking my music away.
Yeah. Well, that's interesting. So there's this site called Open Podcast.
Open Podcast. Okay.
.org. Which is it's an email address and a phone number, right? You send stuff to the email address or you call the phone number, and it's in the feed.
Wow.
So you could do something like that, right? You open up a feed, and you say, people call this number, and you're basically podcasting the, like, whatever, comments and whatever, right?
That's really cool.
Yeah.
Wow.
Now it could go someplace. It could go back into it and keep refueling. I finished Joel Trippi's book on the right here.
Oh, really?
Fantastic.
Fantastic. You were listening to it?
No, I was reading it.
You were actually reading it. Okay.
I was actually reading it, yes. Real words on paper.
Instead of just something on my iPod to listen to.
I would have finished it quicker if it was an audiobook.
That's true, but it wouldn't have been the same experience, right?
I wouldn't have been able to dog ear it as much. But it's so good.
So what were some of the main things about it that were really good, I guess, that you really enjoyed?
The story of the campaign, for one.
Okay.
The story of the Dean campaign, and the story of, well, his political career is pretty fantastic also.
Joe's?
Yeah.
Okay.
He's been doing it forever, right?
Right.
So the stories of some of the campaigns he was on and how trying and hard they were. Also very trying and hard.
Wow.
And just, yeah. So, I mean, I spread a dog eater in the pages that really hit hard, and probably got a dozen.
Wow.
Just like pages that are just like, oh. And he starts talking about his involvement with Dean and what they were trying to do, and that what they noticed after they got into it, figured out what was going on, is that, you know, it's not about Dean, it's not about the personality, it's about the people that are supporting them. And you know what? You know, like, anything else, right? We don't need a big investment in infrastructure to support,
right,
to get our message out anymore.
Yep. It's almost easier.
It's
almost easier because you don't have so many levels to go through to get to something.
Exactly.
You can just do it.
You can just do it.
Exactly.
And you can say, you know, so there was a whole thing. This is what took me back to, like, my very first, like, professional design job, right? You know, we're talking about, I was asking them about clients and projects and things like that, and they said, you know, it takes to get a good client, a big client, a high-paying client, you need to, like, spend time with them, build a relationship, and then you get the payback, right? And it always struck me, I'm like, well, the other option is smaller projects, a little less money, and more of them.
Right.
And in a small agency model, you know, you have to weigh that, right? Well, so what Trippi is saying and what Dean campaign proved is, like, you can run a huge high-profile campaign with an average campaign contribution of $120, right? And
the small but more.
Small but more.
Yeah.
And just, you know, broad and passionate.
Mm-hmm. Right? Exactly. So yeah.
That was good. And that was the thread. And then he wraps up his time with Dean and says, okay, here's the list of things, you know, here's what we need to do next. Here's how we keep this going. And I really liked it. In a big, bold print, it says, I didn't want to list seven things that we need to do because it seems kind of hokey, but here are seven things we need to do. But he talks about how something like citizen journalism and blogging and whatever is so powerful, right? We even have more than a handful of examples where webloggers have taken something down, have said stop, halt.
Right. Well, it's that idea that I guess everyone's watching, and maybe there's something in that, that if you know that everyone's watching, maybe you'll be a better person. You know, I mean, that's sad that maybe that's the motivation that you might need. But
there's a great story over at IQ Conversations about, they call it social entrepreneurship.
Okay.
And there's this guy's purpose, I think he used to run GeekCore or something like that, sending technology professionals to the third world.
Okay.
To build up their infrastructure.
Oh, wow.
It's pretty cool stuff. I don't think it's around anymore, but it was a neat idea. And what they realized was, not to get too far into this, but they realized was they could get this technology infrastructure, but there were deeper problems that they needed to be addressed before they would be of any value. Things like, well, how do you get power?
Yeah.
To power these things.
We don't have water.
Right. We don't have electricity.
Well, that's Maslow's hierarchy of needs.
Exactly.
Yeah. If you can't shelter and clothe and feed yourself, mm-hmm. you can't think about blogging.
That's a great point. So anyway, the social entrepreneur, Adam Gekor, was talking about this bank in Southeast Asia. And 99, whatever crazy percentage, of the bank's patrons are women.
Okay.
And all they do is say, okay, for you to be productive and happy and fulfilled and to be useful to society, you need a goat. You can't afford a goat, so we'll loan you the money so you can buy a goat.
Wow.
And you pay back some fractional amount of whatever over 5 years.
Okay.
3 years, whatever, right? If you want.
If you want.
There was basically like no, there was no form, or the way he described it was there was no formal sort of thing, you must pay this back.
Okay.
Within this time frame. Like, we're trying to help you here, right? More of it than make money. But they said they had one of the lowest default rates of any financial institution anywhere. Because the social pressure among the patrons was so high, right?
Huh.
Because if you were default, you would be, a public humiliation.
Right. You're going to screw it up for all of us.
Exactly.
You've got to do your
everyone
part.
Everyone did their damnedest to, make sure, and that gave more money to the bank so they could help more people and just kind of fund it. And
wow. That's really,
so great.
That's a great example of, I guess, networks, people, social, the impact that can have.
So I think it's one of what you're saying too, right? If everyone is transparent.
Exactly.
It becomes very obvious who's pulling things down and who's lifting things up.
Yes, exactly. And that's a good thing. The one thing that really excited me about the whole blog thought was the rage that I've felt for what's been happening politically in our country, and that there's this individual in charge of the country that we have now again chosen.
Right.
This is a choice that this country has made, and something I have to accept. But that there's so much of this going on, and doesn't seem like there's any real accountability around. Mm-hmm. You know, like when Condoleezza Rice was getting approved, or the hearings were happening, or whatever, she did lie, and that's never been taken to task. Mm-hmm. Or there's video footage of these people doing these things, but what's weird is that that doesn't actually matter. So,
right.
And that's because there's power, right? I mean, there's no one who's going to take you to task if everyone in power doesn't want anything negative to happen to you, I guess. Anyway, my point's meandering. But that there's an outlet for a normal person, somebody who's not necessarily involved in politics, or somebody who's just sort of observing what's happening, and that person can speak out.
Right.
In this country and in this democracy, and that they can, this is just a new forum. Mm-hmm. It's a new way to keep media honest, and that's something that's really exciting to me. Is and what happened during the elections, all the bloggers during the elections, that was amazing, because you know there were all these things going on online, and people were talking or giving speeches, and they were being fact checked by you know hundreds or thousands of people as that this was happening. So if people take advantage of that kind of access to additional information or question, then media doesn't have the control that it does now, because it's owned by a very small group of, not individuals, but conglomerates.
Right.
So that means that everything you see from, you know, I don't even know who owns what, but that the company owns the magazine that you read, and the news that you watch, and the newspaper, and the, you know, that they have the whole voice, and that they're telling you. So this is an opportunity to hear a different voice, I guess, or to speak out, or to somehow banter, or not banter that, but
I mean, that's really being a lobby.
What's that?
Is that effective? Or is that people screaming, help, help, I'm being oppressed?
It's probably both.
Okay.
It's probably both. It's not necessarily going to be effective in a society where people aren't thinking critically or questioning.
Okay.
So if you just sort of accept whatever it is you're being fed, then these people out on the, you know, fringes, quotes, they're just going to be weird people out on the fringes to you, because you like, oh yeah, that's what the guy on the news says, and I saw it on TV, so it's true, you know. But if you are a critical thinker, then there's just a lot more access to a lot more information. It's also challenging, because you have to filter through it. You know, it's opinions. I mean, journalists are supposedly held to a standard of reporting the news. Mm-hmm. I'm a journalist and I report the news. I don't think they all do that.
Right.
But, you know, you can look at someone like a Jim Lehrer and know that when you listen to what he's saying, that he's not infusing his opinion.
Well, that's the thing I was so impressed with, you know, after seeing, like, Outfoxed.
Okay.
How it's completely lopsided, and how other things are completely lopsided.
Yes.
And then you watch something like Frontline's episode on Walmart.
Yes.
Or Frontline's episode on the Persuaders, and how they do a great job of kind of,
that's news,
falling down the middle.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, the Walmart one, I thought was, that's what I left after I watched that. I'm like, yeah, that was a fairly well balanced, and you know, I know more about both sides of the issue now, but they both, you know, the title of the episode was, "What is Walmart good for America?" And I left with, yeah, that's a darn good question.
So that's just a mark of really good journalism, right? And that's something that I don't think that journalists are afforded the ability to do that.
Right.
You know, PBS, I mean, you're talking about Frontline, and that's a PBS program.
Right.
So public broadcasting, I mean, they're doing a fantastic job, you know. And they also really get this whole connecting what they're doing, what they're broadcasting to the internet, and the sort of different channels across. And that's probably because they've been thinking about this in terms of interactive TV for probably a decade, right? Or more.
I wonder if that's a result of how they're financially structured, right?
It's probably part of it.
Like, they have, you know, they're publicly funded and take donations and just like public radio, right? And
mm-hmm.
Very much viewer supported, listener supported with some corporate donations and
right.
Underwriting. So they don't, you know, I wonder if that forces them to be more innovative and use these resources more wisely and be kind of focus on stuff rather than
the meat.
We have money to burn, yeah, so let's just throw fluff out there.
Right.
Yeah.
Or that there's not necessarily an extreme pressure for ratings. I mean, I don't know if that's true or not, but that's what I've heard about other media sources, that, you know, they can't report real news because the pressures are so high to put out whatever they think that the American people want, you know. That's, you know, and this all started, I think, there with OJ and the whole, you know, like 24/7 OJ.
Right.
And it's like, nobody needs that. But they did it anyway. Mm-hmm. And ever since then, it's been this constant need to feed whatever is going out on TV and news, and CNN being a 24-hour news channel, you know. Just
even if there's nothing to report.
That's right.
We still got the airtime.
They have plenty of things to report. Exactly. So, so that's just a constant barrage of things that, you know, they are or are not news. And Jon Stewart summed it up perfectly when he did imitations of journalists mm-hmm. and how they would put forth a question that wasn't really a question,
yes.
or it was a statement or opinion.
Right.
You know, so is Garrick Van Buren crazy? You know, just that kind of thing where it's like, you can't. you're putting forth an idea out into the atmosphere, even though it's completely false or, you know, so far from what could ever be true.
Mm-hmm.
But since you're bringing it up,
maybe
I should think about that, you know?
Totally off topic.
Exactly.
Thanks for listening. I hope you enjoyed the conversation. If you did, head over to garrickvanburen.com/firstcrack and throw a couple bucks in the tip jar. If you didn't, send me an email. firstcrack@gmail.com or a voice message, 206-20-BEAN1. Either way, it'd be good to hear from you. You can find us again at garrickvanburen.com/firstcrack or just Google for First Crack Podcast. That's me for now.